Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Bay Gourmet Forum of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Dana Macy and I'm a food writer. My food and eating memoir, Ravenous, will be published next year by Hay House. This program, Women and Chocolate, a Natural Combination, is part of a three-part series organized by the Bay Gourmet Forum to showcase women in the food and wine business. Joining me in this panel discussion tonight are Christine Doerr, the founder and CEO of Neo Coco. Founded in 2008 and based in San Francisco, Christine specializes in truffles made from ganache only, without a hard outer chocolate shell. Christine created these truffles so that her customers can get to what she calls the heart of the truffle experience immediately. No delayed gratification. Milena Lopez-Maggi is the owner of The Chocolate Bar. Founded in 2006 and based in Berkeley, Milena specializes in bonbons, chocolates filled with ganache, caramels, and marzipan. Kathy Wiley is the owner of Poco Dolce. Founded in 2003 and based in San Francisco, Kathy's company specializes in bonbons, tiles, and toffees, and what she calls the savory side of sweet. And at the end, and pinch hitting at the very last minute, for which we are very, very grateful, is Mindy Fong, the owner and chocolatier of San Francisco-based Jade Chocolates. Founded in 2008, Mindy specializes in handcrafted chocolate bars flavored with teas and spices from the Pacific Islands and Asia. So everybody, please give a warm welcome. Thank you. Okay, so tonight's panel is called Women in Chocolate, a Natural Combination. So what I want to clear up right at the very beginning is this. Is there really a special connection between women and chocolate, or is that a bunch of bunk?
Well, personally, I think... Can everybody hear me okay? All right. I think that hormonally, yeah, women probably do need chocolate a little bit more than men. We just get really soothed by it. And in my experience, about 80% of my customers are female. And then of the men, about half of them are either getting dragged in by a female or they're buying a gift for a female. So it's true. There is a special tie.
Okay.
I agree.
Yeah. Can you say anything more about that?
I find that women experience chocolate different than men as far as the women have more description of the chocolate, the flavors that are in it, whereas men talk more about the texture, and that's just in my experience. That's what I found.
So the vocabulary of chocolate is different for men and women.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, Mindy, what do you think down there?
Well, it's been shown that it helps with decreased risk of preeclampsia for pregnant women in the third trimester. So it does chemically do good for the female body as well. And it's given as gifts for Valentine's Day, so everyone knows that it's an aphrodisiac.
I would agree. I would say that the majority of our customers are women also. But, I mean, I think it's pretty universal.
A universal love. Why is chocolate so universally beloved?
I wish I knew, but it's great.
It's great. It tastes good. It's yummy.
It's romantic food. Mm-hmm. And now it's officially good for you, dark chocolate at least. So uh-huh. That gives us permission to enjoy it even more.
Uh-huh. So all four of you make what is known as artisanal chocolate. And I'm wondering, how would you describe the difference between commercial and artisanal chocolates?
Well, for starters, commercial chocolates I think of as factory-made rather than handmade. And they also usually have a lot of additives, artificial ingredients, fillers, non-cocoa butter fats, whereas an artisan product is usually handmade in small batches, really fresh and all natural.
I would agree. I mean, basically, a commercial producer is looking for a long shelf life, and a lot of other things get, you know, sacrificed for that. Whereas we do things in, like, micro batches. Every single thing is molded by hand. It's pretty labor-intensive. To that end, a commercial producer is not going to copy it because they don't want to do that. They want to flip a switch.
We also can react to customers' feedback faster. There's not much red tape since we do everything in micro batches. So we have a better relationship with the customers, I feel.
Mm-hmm. What should one look for if one doesn't know much about chocolate and one wants to start learning more about artisanal chocolate? What are the qualities that one should look for in a good chocolate? How does one start to learn about how chocolate tastes and what to look for?
I think the best thing is to just go out and for me, you get a series of chocolates and you just pick them up, you take 4 to 6 of them, and you bring them home and you taste them with friends. We do it constantly at work. I'm constantly bringing back things for people to try from other companies. And not only does it just educate you on what you like or what the flavor profiles are, but you can talk about the issues. We bring in commercial chocolate, and we also go out. I always go out to the market and just bring back stuff to say, oh, well, you know, this is an interesting flavor profile, or this is coming from the other side of the nation. Is it holding its freshness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's so many places, so many great places in the city to go and find those kind of place, different kinds of chocolate. Rainbow Grocery and By Right Market and
Chocolate Covered is another great one. Yeah.
Where are these located? Where is Chocolate Covered located?
Chocolate Covered's in Noe Valley on 24th Street, mm-hmm. and he has a huge selection of chocolate bars from around the world, the biggest that I've seen anywhere. It's just floor to ceiling, all chocolate. Definitely worth checking out. And I would just say, if you're exploring new chocolates and you have the choice between something with really wholesome ingredients in it and then something with, like, artificial vanillin and artificial this and that, just go for the natural one. It's probably going to be a better bet.
I think it's always helpful also to go to a shop that's maybe a little smaller, a little bit hands-on. As Melina mentioned, Chocolate Covered, which is on 24th Street, very small, has a lot of selection, and you're generally going to talk to the owner who knows a lot about chocolate. And can tell you, you can say, well, you know, I tend to like milk, or I tend to like dark, and I tend to like spicy, whatever, and the shopkeeper should be able to direct you to that area.
Kathy, before you just mentioned flavor profile, can you just talk a little bit about what that means in terms of chocolate? What kind of language would one use about chocolate flavor profiles?
Well, I think that it can be used in two different levels. One would be the chocolate itself. If you're talking about a plain chocolate, you can talk about whether it's milk, bittersweet, the amount of cocoa mass in it. Is the milk chocolate in the European style where it seems almost caramelized, the type of flavors that are pronounced. And then once you start adding to the chocolate, you can talk about what those flavor profiles are, whether you're adding something sweet, something savory. We do an Aztec chili where we add cinnamon and chili and pumpkin seeds, and we would talk about that and say, well, this has a spicy profile. There's a lot more going on, or you might want something a little simpler. So I would say there are those two levels, the chocolate itself and the chocolate once it's mixed with other ingredients.
So I'm going to jump a little bit ahead of myself here because there's something I'm curious about, which is, what is the most outrageous chocolate you have ever created?
Hmm. Well, for me, there have been outrageous ones that really have not worked at all.
Give us an example. For example, what?
A Parmesan cheese truffle.
Sounds potentially promising.
That was
exactly what I was going to say.
Really?
Yes.
People didn't like it, but I loved it.
You did? See, yeah. I didn't like it.
Did you make your own, Christine, Parmesan truffle?
Yeah, I did.
Did you sell it? Funny.
No, I didn't get to sale.
Because?
I loved it, but...
You ate them all?
No. No, it just didn't get... people didn't like it. My friends who tried it didn't like it. I thought it was a natural combination with the salt and the, and being rich and fat. And
well, one that did work that's been really successful, it's one of our best sellers, and I actually brought it here tonight so you guys can try it, is a Kalamata olive caramel in a dark chocolate shell.
I've had it. It's very good.
And her Aztec tiles are awesome.
And it is my 9-year-old son Matthew's absolute favorite from her shop, so we can all attest. Okay, so what other outrageous chocolates have you created?
I did kind of a Thai curry. It was basically but it was almost like an accident. It was like a coconut. One of our coconut tiles sat where the chili was, and I really liked it. But I can. You know, tell you from personal research that would be a pretty narrow market. I've also done a chili popcorn.
Chili popcorn?
That one's actually still pretty good. I have to say I really like it.
So what is this? Is there popcorn in your chocolate, or how does this work?
Well, that one, that's actually pretty recent. But it's basically like a buttery toffee with popcorn and chili, and then made into a little square and then covered in dark chocolate.
Wow.
So. That's still sitting on my desk.
So tell me, tell me a little bit about your market research processes. Is it that you put out a batch at the counter, and if they sell, that's your market research? Do you ask your friends? Do you whip up batches in your kitchen? How does this work?
Well, I have the luxury of having a little shop where I can test things out. I won't put anything out that I don't personally like, because then I just don't feel like I can rightfully sell it if I think it's nasty. But, we'll always try a small plate of something and just get customer feedback to start out with.
I pretty much go directly to friends and family. And once I get to a certain level, I might put it out to top accounts or something to get their feedback. But I have one of my best taste testers here in the audience right now.
Hi there. And what's your name? Jonathan, taste tester.
But every once in a while, I do something that people don't want. You know, I mean, people that, I had one product where the staff was like, I don't know, and I just went ahead with it. It's done very fine.
Good. Yeah, I have tasting parties, have people come over, my friends and family come over and try them out. And also I take them into my commercial kitchen that I work out of, La Cocina, and there's a couple of my tasters down here too.
Nice.
So, Milena mentioned her Parmesan truffle. Have you had any other interesting failures?
Thai peanut really didn't work very well. It was like a salty, spicy Thai peanut sauce in chocolate. And I thought conceptually it would work, but it's really bad. Oh, and also just recently, bacon in chocolate is really big, and I thought it would be really cool to do a vegan bacon bar option, but all the vegan bacon bits that I've found are just
deadly. They're deadly.
Yeah. I don't know what they make them out of, but there's no substitute for real bacon.
Now, I'm wondering, does that surprise you that bacon chocolate is big right now? Does that surprise anybody here? I see a lot of yeses and a lot of noes. I recently had the pleasure of trying a bacon chocolate bar known as Moe's Bacon Bar, right, made by Vosges out in Chicago, and I can attest that it is absolutely delicious. I loved it. So the creation of chocolate and the creation of flavors seems to me to be very artistic and very creative. Milena, you just said before that you have an idea, and it pops into your head, and you try it out, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. I want to read just some of the flavors that these fine chocolatiers make. Christina's truffles include almond butter and smoked salt, freshly zested lime, toasted coconut, and warm ginger root. Is that together, toasted coconut and warm ginger root, or are they separate?
Those are separate.
Oh, toasted coconut, and warm ginger root.
When I make a mistake sometimes when I'm making them, which has happened a couple of times, they do become one.
Which can be interesting. Milena's bonbons, we're going to taste tonight her Kalamata olive bonbons, tamarind mango, cinnamon orange chili, and something that I tasted recently, a fennel ganache. Is that what you would call it, fennel ganache?
Yep, fennel, okay. From the back garden.
From the back garden. She has wild fennel growing in her back garden and turned into a truffle. Kathy's bonbons include cinnamon chili chocolate, mango chili chocolate, and Turkish coffee. And Mindy's bars are flavored with genmaicha tea, lapsang souchong, roasted brown rice, and cardamom. So these are remarkably interesting flavors. They're a long way from just plain chocolate, which is lovely and has its place. But these are a different world. Where do you come up with the ideas? How do they pop into your head? Where do you get your inspiration from?
For me, really, it's just eating well. I love to eat new exotic foods, and when I find a new taste that really works in regular savory food, I always ask myself, how would that go with chocolate? And then I try it.
I would agree. It's pretty much anywhere and everywhere you are, you're always thinking about it. Whether you're either at the grocery store or having dinner, walking down the street, in bed, whatever. If something comes up, you just think about it and try it.
Well, for me, I use flavors that I've grown up with, my Asian cultural background. And I also talk to my retail customers. I ask them what they would like to see in chocolate. And one of my bars, the Dragon's Breath, which has a lapsang souchong, which is an alternative to the Moe's Bacon Bar because it's smoky.
Smoky, right. Mm-hmm.
And it's vegan at the same time. That's been a real bestseller. It's one of the most talked about bars.
That one's my favorite.
So it's almost like a flavor palette that you create, and you kind of grab from if you have a sense of wanting something smoky, because of your background, you think of tea. You want something smoky, you think of
bacon. Or liquid smoke.
I have a funny, kind of a little funny story about how I came up with my most popular truffle is the almond butter with smoked sea salt. And that's kind of what I do with all my truffles is I take something that's kind of common, traditional, like that one came from peanut butter with chocolate. So I wanted something a little different, so I took almond butter and mixed it in. And then I was looking to differentiate my truffles because they all kind of have the same shape, so I like to put a different topping on top. So I literally just looked in my pantry and just was like looking up and down, like what would be good, what would be good. And I saw some smoked salt that I got from the farmer's market. I just took that and I said, oh, that's perfect. That's like smalted, you know, like almonds and salt, perfect together. Sprinkled it on top, and it's been a bestseller ever since.
There you go.
Yeah. It's a great success story.
Yeah. Share with us some of your other success stories. How did you stumble upon a bestseller by accident, or?
Well, the first bonbon that we ever came out with is a tamarind mango ganache in the shape of a Buddha, and that was inspired by a trip to Thailand. There's just tamarind and mango everywhere, and then the Buddha is just a prominent deity in Southeast Asia. So that was the first one we ever made, and it just accidentally happened to be vegan, and it's still one of the most popular today. And then another travel-inspired one was Brandy Alexander chocolate that was inspired by a vacation in Dominican Republic when we were sipping Brandy Alexanders on the beach. It's really inspiring to kind of get away sometimes.
Yes.
I would say our bestseller is a burnt caramel toffee. Mm. And when I was first just teaching myself how to temper chocolate and playing around with different flavors, I burnt the toffee.
So, perfect.
And there you have it. I just basically kind of fine-tuned it and did it by eye and decided that it stood up better to the dark chocolate, and it's done really well. Then later when I had to do real toffee, I had to rethink the whole thing.
Right. Do all of you work from Couverture?
Yes.
Okay. Does anybody want to describe what Couverture is for the audience? For those who might not know?
It's chocolate that comes from, like, we don't work from the cacao bean to a bar. We get pre-made blocks of chocolate in either bars or discs, and we melt them down. And they usually have a higher cocoa butter content than chocolate for eating because that makes them melt easier and come out of molds better and shinier.
Does anybody here work from the bean?
Nope.
That's a pretty tough thing to do,
yeah,
or from a paste.
That's a whole other thing. Yeah.
That's a whole other business.
That's a chocolate maker. I think we're all chocolatiers.
All chocolatiers.
Right,
so
fund yours.
Right. Weren't we talking, though, Milena, about someone you knew that was starting to make chocolate in his or her shop? Am I remembering that?
Well, that was me. I mean, my partner and I went to Bali recently and picked up a whole bunch of cacao beans just with the dream to start making nano-batch artisan chocolate from scratch. And so we bought a little tabletop grinder that you just put the beans in with the sugar and everything and just grinds away for days and days. And it's really, it's a huge can of worms because there's a whole science to it, and it's also an art form. It has a lot to do with the fermentation of the beans and how they're grown and how they're roasted. And, I mean, it's not something that you can just, one day decide, I'm going to make a chocolate bar. We thought that would be how it was, but it's definitely not, I'll tell you.
Well, if I remember correctly, that is how you opened a chocolate shop.
True. But something about
Milena's past life was she was a jewelry maker and a singer in a rock and roll band. And then she decided with her partner to open up a chocolate shop because it seemed like fun, right?
Yeah, something fun, something creative. I think making chocolates, bonbons, and truffles is a lot more forgiving than actually making a chocolate bar.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fun to practice. I definitely will. It's easier to get the machines and material even on a small level these days. And I think that I would like to do it also, but less in the sense of just producing chocolate and more in the sense of understanding the whole process and being able to tell the difference of what somebody's doing. You know, are they conching enough? Are they, rather to my liking, and the difference between a European and American and New American and all that kind of stuff.
I have great respect for chocolate makers. It's very, it's quite a science.
Is anybody interested in learning a little bit about where the beans grow? How many people here are interested purely as consumers of chocolate, and how many are possibly interested in the business of chocolate? Yes, let's start again. How many people are interested in chocolate simply as consumers to learn what it's like to eat? Great preponderance. Okay, and how many people are interested in learning more about the chocolate business? A few. Oh, okay, good. All right, well, do you want to just talk a little bit briefly about where it grows and how difficult it is to get those cocoa pods and why chocolate really is so expensive? A little bit of the backstory?
Sure. Well, it grows in the tropics, 20 degrees north and south of the equator. And I mentioned we went to Bali, and it really just grows wild there without being cared for at all. It's kind of amazing. But the cuvature that we use has a lot of Ghanaian chocolate, also Venezuelan, Malagasy, Dominican Republic. Those are the main countries that the cacao comes from. And we steer clear of slave trade chocolate, quote unquote, from the Ivory Coast, where there's just a lot of really poor labor relations with the cacao farmers and stuff. So by avoiding chocolate from the Ivory Coast, we're kind of doing our part to be ethical chocolate manufacturers.
Anybody else want to pick up?
I mean, it does take years for a cacao plant to actually reach maturity, and the process of fermentation is its own thing.
I know that it has to be cut by hand. All the pods need to be cut by machete.
Cut off, right.
Yeah.
One of the things is that they basically are trying to get the producers to be able to get a little bit of a better income for what they're doing. And naturally, and of course you'd want to say, okay, well, perhaps that they should, if they actually produce the chocolate from the beans, they would get a higher value from it. But then you've got to produce it and ship it from an equatorial area, which is pretty difficult. So I think it's kind of a constant battle on what that's going to be. I met somebody who had a plantation in Ecuador who was just doing something that I thought was pretty interesting. And they were basically doing the step right in between producing a chocolate and just shipping beans. And that is that they actually took it through the first step and made a chocolate liqueur, which is grinding down the cocoa mass. And then they can ship it as a partially finished product, get a better price for it, ship it to somebody, possibly even somebody like us, and we could take it that next level. The next step is actually a pretty long one, but it's interesting to know that difference of producing it and then taking it and changing it into a product. So we'll see where that goes in the next few years.
It's a very long, complicated scientific process that's from pod to pot to liquor, I guess, right? To the chocolate liquor.
Right? And once it's liquor, it still has to be refined more and mixed with sugar and everything and to be turned into a finished bar that snaps.
That snaps, right. We have questions from the audience, and it's one that I wanted to ask you as well. I'd like to know how you, why you chose chocolate, how you started in the business. Maybe we'll start at the end with Mindy.
Why did I choose chocolate? There was a lot going on in my life at the time that I wanted to start my own business. I was having a baby and decided all of a sudden to get a divorce at the same time.
Oh, my gosh.
So it made sense. Why not start a business in chocolate? Well, before I was in the process of getting divorced, I was going to be a full-time stay-at-home mom. So obviously that was going to change. And I was inspired by two people in my life. The first was my grandfather, who came from China when he was about 16 or so, back in 1920. He didn't have any relatives, didn't speak English, no money. Was here just for a better life for himself. And from then, he had several restaurants and liquor stores during his lifetime. And by the time I came into this world, he was already retired. He had spoke perfect English and had an apartment building where everyone stayed. It was like the family clan. It was three generations. So he was my first inspiration. My second was while I was pregnant, that's when I discovered the joys of dark chocolate. So I just thought chocolate would be good.
Had you been a milk chocolate eater before?
Actually, not too much.
Not chocolate. You just discovered
really.
It while you were pregnant.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. My favorite before that was a Reese's peanut butter cup, mm-hmm. And
fine,
I can only eat one every so often because it made me feel bad, like low. There's too much sugar in it. So, for some reason, when I was pregnant, I wanted fruits, vegetables, whole foods, and dark chocolate.
Thank you. How else did you? Who wants to take it next? How did you get your inspiration and open up a business?
Well, for me, I've always wanted to have my own business, but I think that at least in my life, I had so many different things that I was interested in that narrowing that down to what I would actually spend the majority of my day and night doing took quite some time. And I started started with baking. I started the business as a baking business, but then pretty quickly realized that that wasn't really where I wanted to be in 5 years. If you want to be the architect of your own business, you have to see where it's going to be. What will it be to your staff? What will it be to you? And I would say my unglamorous version of that, my unromantic version, was that I looked at chocolate, which I've always loved, and decided, you know what? Honestly, it has a better shelf life and a higher price point. That's my business end of it. And I always tend to say that I've never really been in that into sweets or anything, but I think I'm realizing that's not true at all. Pretty much always have a stash of something around, even if it's just to look at the packaging. So so I guess the fact that it ended up that it's chocolate and sweet is not surprising. The only part that is probably truly indicative of my palate is that I put salt on pretty much everything. So my chocolate has salt on it. Big crystals right on top.
I come from more of an arts and crafts background. Before I got into chocolate, I was working as a metalsmith in a small little artisan metalsmithing studio and also making jewelry on the side. And, I mean, I just love making pretty things with my hands. That's one of my favorite things to do. And at the time, I was just looking for something else to do that didn't involve inhaling toxic fumes all the time. And I always loved to cook because I grew up with my grandma, who's from Chile, and just would cook everything from scratch, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so I always was in the kitchen with her cooking, and just that's how I developed my love for food. And so I just kind of stumbled upon artisan chocolate, and I was just inspired by all the new chocolate artists that are out there that are doing beautifully amazing things and making them taste awesome. And it just seemed like such a fun medium to work with that I tried it out and it stuck. Here I am.
And I actually, my first job when I was 17 was at a bakery at Stanford Shopping Center called Cocola, run by Alice Medrick. And that, I think, it started me on my way. Because of that, I think I went to culinary school here in San Francisco at the California Culinary Academy, and I got my degree in just not in pastry or chocolate, but just in as being a regular chef. And then I worked as a pastry chef for about 10 years. And then similar to Mindy, I went through a divorce, and I threw myself back into school, and I became a graphic designer, and then did graphic design for about 7 years. And then the entrepreneurship was always there for me. It was always looming. I would do craft fairs on the side and all kinds of artsy stuff. So I had an opportunity to do some chocolate work for somebody one time, and I said, you know, this is where I want to be. This is what I want to do as a business. And it stuck.
So it sounds like we've got three romantics and one pragmatist. Now, Kathy, is there anything romantic about chocolate for you?
Absolutely. I've absolutely always been into food. I've tried my hand at cooking in San Francisco, in London, in Amsterdam. So that's always been on the side for me. You know, I've always done that. My father I'm actually from Alaska, so my father would travel down here to San Francisco, both for wine and food. You know, one of my inspirations would be my father, and basically now I'm in any place that he's ever dreamed of and shopped at, my chocolate's been carried there. So I love it.
That's a beautiful full
circle.
So
I think about it all the time, and I only wish he could share it with me.
That's very sweet.
And so now for the other romantics here, have you become more practical as business owners, chocolate store owners?
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to pay attention to the numbers when you're in business. So you have to kind of get realistic every once in a while.
And I've only been selling since November, so I'm still in the honeymoon period.
Yeah.
Here's a wonderful question. What happens in the body when we eat chocolate? Can you discuss? Can you discuss the role of serotonin and other hormones? Well, Mindy, you said that you started eating chocolate when you were pregnant. Did
yes.
you notice that there was a difference before and after?
I don't know.
Did you have an enhanced sense of well-being?
It just tasted really good.
Okay. Good.
I've never had dark chocolate mm-hmm. quite like that. The only thing I had dark chocolate was those... for Halloween, they'd have those Hershey's special dark chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty nasty. It just was a turn off. But one day I decided to buy this French chocolate. I believe it was Valrhona. And it was the best thing in the world. That's still one of my favorite bars.
Well, yeah, I mean, with finer chocolate, it's usually a higher cacao content. And cacao is the part that has the serotonin-enhancing properties and lowers your blood pressure and has antioxidants in it. So it does make sense that, you know, you'd get more pleasure out of a really fine chocolate bar than a Hershey Special Dark, which probably only has like 10% cacao in it anyway. As far as mood elevation, chocolate really does mimic a sense of being in love. And I think women might be more sensitive to that, and that's why there's so much romance around chocolate, just because chemically it makes you feel like you're in love.
I love that. That's wonderful. Does anybody agree with that?
I agree. I like Mindy's explanation, because that's really how it is for most people, right? It's like it just made me feel good, it tasted good, and that's all we need.
And you're happy. You're happy.
Happy.
Now, I'm curious. You know, we've been talking a little bit about some of the commercial candies, really, that are out there, like the Hershey's and the this and the that. Some people really like them a lot. And they have every right to like those kinds of candies. Now, I don't know, guys, help me out here. What am I trying to say?
Chocolate snobs, is that what you're
Yeah, maybe I'm getting, to? Maybe I'm heading towards the chocolate snob question. Thank you. What is a chocolate snob? And can chocolates... What is a chocolate snob? Okay, what is it?
I would say for me, it's somebody who comes directly up to me and says, what's the percentage?
Yes.
And you wonder if they really know or care, or they just have something where it's like, it must be really high. Mm-hmm. I won't even look at you. I would say. I mean, it's somebody who generally does that. And probably somebody who really enjoys it and loves their stuff too, but... When somebody comes up directly to me and asks me that, I'm like, talk to me a little bit more about what you want. What are you looking for?
Right. I say, like, what do you like? That's
right.
What I ask.
To me, a chocolate snob is someone who's prejudiced against certain types of chocolate just because they have milk or their cacao content is too low, and they just have already decided before they even try it that they're not going to like it. And then also, the kind of snob that I really don't like is the kind that just has their particular taste and thinks that that's the only taste, and that, you know, looks down upon people who have different taste. Everybody has their own taste. So.
Yeah, I would say it's always appreciated. If you know your mind, that's absolutely perfectly fine, but it's always fun to kind of try and see what you like and not just come up and be like, okay, that's it, that's all I do, unless perhaps you have an allergy.
Right.
Well, pleasure is a very subjective kind of thing, right? You know, one could love Reese's Peanut Butter Cup or a Hershey's bar or those cherry cordials, and pleasure is subjective. But what would you try and impart to people who have never moved out of the realm of candy into artisanal chocolate? What would you say to them about artisanal chocolate that is something that they might think about?
I have a neighbor who I'm trying to convert.
From what to what?
From M&Ms. Not that there's anything wrong with M&Ms, because I think everything has its time and place. Mm-hmm. But I'm still working on him. His wife is into it, but he's not, and I don't know if I can convert him.
So has he tried any of your truffles?
Yeah, he has.
And he thinks?
I don't think he knows the
uh-huh.
difference.
Mm-hmm. They taste the same as the M&Ms without the, like,
yeah.
crunch?
Yeah, I think
uh-huh.
so.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay. Well, you know, this kind of brings us to another question from the audience. Share your views on percentage of cocoa in a confection. Why 1% is better or different from others. When is 0% appropriate for one use? Is there such a thing as 0%?
Well, maybe they're talking about white chocolate, which is just cocoa butter and
maybe.
Sugar and milk.
Yeah.
And I'd say, yeah, there is definitely an application for white chocolate. We usually use white chocolate with paired with something that's really extremely sour, so that the flavors balance each other out, like passion fruit. Is, if you've ever eaten just passion fruit on its own, it's really sour, but paired with white chocolate, it's just like adding a little sugar and cream to it, and it's really nice. I personally prefer darker chocolate, but I can't say for certain that, you know, I like a 70% better than a 68%, because it really varies from manufacturer to manufacturer.
And from bean to bean and region to region. And
exactly.
And condition to condition.
There are so many variables involved that you really can't judge a chocolate solely on cacao content. But generally speaking, something really dark, like 70% or more, is going to taste much chocolatier than a lighter chocolate.
I agree with that. I mean, I've had a 99% chocolate and totally enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But then I've had it again, and it just reminded me of sneaking that chunk of chocolate off the baking shelf when you were a kid. You're like,
the baker's chocolate.
Yeah.
No, it's not chocolate.
Yeah.
But I think you just got to go for what you like. I mean, just
but try
it.
Yeah, totally. Try try everything.
That's my advice, is try it.
Well, I remember when I was down at Melina's shop, she said, have you ever had, was it 100%?
It's 100%.
She said, have you ever had a 100%, a piece of 100% chocolate? And I said, no, I have not. And so she gave me a piece, and it was like eating earth. It was so not unpleasant. Not something I would go for all the time. It's its own thing. But it was extremely interesting, very dark, bitter, and almost drug-like, actually, in its taste. It was quite fascinating, and I was glad to have had that experience. Mindy, what do you think about percentage chocolate in your chocolates?
It's just there mainly for the consumer to know. It's a marketing tool. It has nothing to do with the taste, as we all say, because it's an arbitrary number. It's cocoa butter and chocolate liquor, and you don't know which is more. So it's just really there for you to know how much chocolate it is, but doesn't tell you about the taste.
It gives you a general indication of all the other things that are in your chocolate. You know, if it's 70%, that means 30% of it are other things. You know, vanilla, sugar, all those kind of things.
And that so much of the quality of a chocolate depends on the manufacturing process. So you can have a very high cocoa content, and it can be a truly lousy.
Yeah, it goes all the way back to the beans and when they pick the beans and how ripe they are and how long they fermented and what the weather was like when they were fermenting. And it's so deep and rich.
Mm-hmm. Here's another question that I wanted to ask you. This is also from the audience. How is artisanal chocolate doing in today's down economy? I'm sort of wondering if it's like lipstick, you know? You treat yourself to a lipstick, you treat yourself to a couple of pieces of chocolate, even though your bank account is heading south.
I'd say that's true to an extent. People are still treating themselves to small indulgences. It just kind of adds spice to your life and takes your mind off of your dwindling bank account. But I'd say that we're probably selling less during the slow period. Like during major holidays, I don't think there's any change in the amount of chocolate we sell, because it's a great gift. It's like a low price point when it comes to a Christmas gift or Hanukkah gift. So we do great around then. But then the rest of the time, people are thinking harder, I think, about indulging in a fancy little treat. Mm-hmm. So they're not buying as much for themselves.
Yeah, I would say we've seen a lot more growth in the past, and now it's pretty even. I think people definitely are indulging. For my product, it's a little adventurous for some people, so people aren't being quite as adventurous. But I'd say it's pretty steady for us.
I kind of noticed that, too, when the really bad news started coming out about the economy just crashing. I noticed that our more exotic flavors started selling a little less, and our kind of classic flavors, that like the comforting, you know, the marshmallow, the pecan caramel, sales in those departments went up because I think people were just looking for a sure bet. Like, I know I'm going to like that one. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure I'm going to like the Kalamata all over the Parmesan. So I'm not going to buy that. People are being more careful.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's sort of the equivalent of chocolate comfort food.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really interested to hear what you guys have to say about that because since I just started selling, I really haven't experienced. So I don't know what's not good and what's, you know, how well it's doing. But I'm selling, so I think it's good.
Yeah. Just keep selling. Yeah, I think we'll prevail.
Here's a question about the chocolate business. It says, can you talk more about the business aspect? For example, do you all use full-time commercial kitchens? How do you get financing?
I would love to talk about the kitchen that I work out of. It's called La Cocina. It's in the Mission District, and it's a not-for-profit kitchen, that incubation kitchen that supports low-income women predominantly. And they have a program there that if you apply, you can possibly get into, and I was lucky enough to get into it. I love it. I'm so happy to be there. Awesome. I just have to sing my praises for La Cocina.
Nice.
So are there other food products that come out of the kitchen besides chocolate?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What are some examples?
Right down here we have Kika from Kika's Treats. She's one of them. And Claire Squares. Mm-hmm. And those are just the suite, but there's also caterers who work out of the kitchen.
So is this a kitchen that's open to low-income women to start their businesses?
There's also commercial work companies also.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yes.
That's great.
I started out renting commercial kitchen space in San Rafael and then Sausalito and sharing with other caterers, and that really did not work out too well because, I mean, chocolate is a sensitive thing and it requires a certain temperature and humidity. So, I mean, I'd be in the middle of watching something set and then all of a sudden a guy comes in and starts steaming lasagna right next to me. That's not working. So finally we took the plunge and opened up a little shop almost exactly 1 year ago in Berkeley, and we have a kitchen in the back. It's actually mostly kitchen with a tiny storefront, and that's great because the space is all ours. It's 100% chocolate all the time, and we really bootstrapped it. I mean, it's all just been credit cards, person-to-person loans, you know, like everything that the score counselor told me not to do, I did. But here I am, so sometimes you just got to go with your gut.
Yeah, La Cocina is wonderful. Unfortunately, it wasn't there when I started. So I would say it was definitely tough. The first 4 years, it was just me alone trying to figure out where I could produce something. And I would say that having started doing a baked goods and confection company allowed me to rent kitchens, but I'd rent, you know, a bakery's off hours and then found another place. But similar to Milena, it was the same thing. Once you start moving into chocolate, you can't be in a savory kitchen. Mm-hmm. You can't be in super close quarters with somebody, you know, sauteing garlic and onions. It just, it doesn't work that way. So eventually, once that just hit a climax, I had to rent a space. And I was quite ambitious. I rented like a 2,000 square foot warehouse. But it's been fine. I was a little ahead of myself, but it was worth it in the long run.
Has your business caught up to the 2,000 foot space?
What's that?
Has your business caught up to the 2,000 square foot space?
Yeah, we've already expanded to 2,000 more. We're not completely maxed out on that side yet, but pretty much my desk and my assistant's desk got bumped last holiday. There really was just no more room, I mean, unless we started building up, which wasn't totally an option.
And what about you, Mindy?
Right now I'm at the JCC on California and Masonic. That's where Charles Chocolate started. He actually told me about the space. I'm soon to be getting out of there. I'm growing out. It's only a 500 square foot space, and I'm not able to do pallets, which I'm hoping to do for Christmas time.
What can you explain what you mean by pallets?
A pallet is like a 4x4 by four high amount of product, which mm-hmm. would be about 11,000 bars for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to get into Canada. Dina DeLuca in Japan, and Dubai, and all of that hopefully will happen this year or next year. Hopefully next year. But I have to get into a space first in order to produce my palettes.
I find that extraordinary. You just started in 2008, was it? Or 9?
January 08, yeah.
January 08. So in a year and a half, you are now almost into Dean and DeLuca Japan and in Dubai.
Well, I chose to do bars because it's more shelf-stable than truffles, which mm-hmm. only have like a 3-week shelf life. I was lucky to think about that. And I could reach a larger audience farther for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. Bars last 6 months to a year. So far, I've been self-funded. I sold a house, and I sold it at the right time. And I've been building my accounts. I have about 50 accounts throughout the U.S., mainly here in California. And right now, it's starting to build up. There's no recession for me because it's my first year, so I have nowhere to go but to go up. And money's coming in, mm-hmm. thankfully. So I've almost exhausted my bank account, but it's coming in, so I'm gradually getting there.
That's a wonderful story. So is it my imagination, or are there more chocolate shops around? It seems like I bumped into Milena's shop on Solano Avenue in Berkeley, which is where I live, and now I look around, and I'm seeing these artisanal chocolate shops popping up. Were they always there, or am I just starting to notice them?
It's a recent thing, I think, just like how people are getting more educated about coffee and wine and
food,
olives. People are becoming more interested in learning about chocolate and developing a more sophisticated palate. And I think once you start tasting really fine artisan chocolate, it's kind of hard to go back to the mass market stuff. And mm-hmm. so that just opens up a window of opportunity for artisan chocolatiers. And I have noticed that a lot of them have popped up. It's pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. I mean, we seem to be an epicenter for chocolate, I would say.
Yeah.
Any town you go to has something, and more often more than one or two.
I think there's a lot of people who travel around the world here too, and they come back and they want to have that. They want to try something like that.
Mm-hmm. Now it's interesting because we are you are 4 women chocolatiers here on this panel, and yet most chocolatiers are men. Was that no, yes, or is it?
Well, I mean, I don't know the numbers for sure, but I'd say that the more prominent chocolatiers uh-huh. are men. I don't know if in fact there are more men chocolatiers, or if the few that are out there just shamelessly self-promote themselves more easily than we do. But I know what you mean, yeah.
You know, I've been really agonizing over this question. I knew it was coming, and I've been out talking to my friends and talking to my husband, and just I've been putting it on. There's a forum called The Chocolate Life, and I put that question out to other chocolatiers, asking them, and I kind of get a range of answers, and I don't like them.
You don't like who?
I don't like the answers.
What are some of the answers?
It seems kind of like women like to work in smaller things, and men, I mean, this is really a generalization, but men like to build things that are going to last forever and make a mark, whereas women want to do like a small thing, and I'm seeing it as like having children. It's like they want to make some small little thing and keep it small and be proud of it. And I'm not sure if that's what I want, but I'm seeing it all in a whole new way for just that question. What do you guys think? I'm really interested in what
I personally think that it's very similar to cooking. I mean, are there more men cooks or are there more men chefs? If you want to take the numbers, I'd probably hazard a guess that there's probably more women cooking in general. Do they go and seek the limelight and turn that into a business? No, they don't. They just do it because they love to do it, or it's what they've chosen or not chosen.
Well, are the men then looking for the limelight? I don't know that it is.
It's just that I think that traditionally men are meant to go out and do their thing. And if it's going to be something, they're going to, it's, I mean, in the past, it's been something that they've had to make successful. They have had to do that where, you know, you're probably right to a degree. I mean, yeah, women just do it because they're passionate about it. They love it. They don't need to go out there and create an empire. And in the past, that has not been their role. I mean, their role has been to create things for their loved ones. So I think that, I think also that as, if you want to talk about gender, men are taught to go out and get things and be more assertive, and women are taught to just do what they need to do and figure it out. So I would say if you really want to take a true count,
can you name like a couple of renowned chocolate tiers?
Katrina Markoff,
right? Yeah. Vosges chocolate.
Okay.
Right? Okay.
Yes,
that's
right.
One.
Okay.
Kathy Wiley.
Kathy Wiley.
Fran Bigelow.
Fran.
That's right. Bigelow, yes.
Fran who?
Fran Bigelow from Fran's chocolate.
The salted caramel.
Yeah.
Who else?
I know.
I guess I don't get caught up in that kind of stuff.
Oh, I was just, you know, I never thought of it either, but I think it's a very interesting question.
There's a whole lot of salt going on around here. I've heard salt mentioned in chocolates all evening. What are some of the latest trends in chocolate? Salt, right?
Yeah, definitely salt. Pairing chocolate with any kind of unusual savory ingredient, like I've been reading about chocolate and mushrooms, chocolate and bread, chocolate and beer. All these kind of, it's like we ran out of ideas with the sweet stuff, so now we have to start exploring the savory world to try and get flavors that work. What else?
I would second that.
Yeah.
I would say people like things, I mean, certainly savory is fun and opens up a whole new world of possibilities. Second to that, it's like go for the gold on the most exotic thing you can find and bring it in and throw it in. Does it work or not? That remains to be seen, but absolutely, people just keep pushing it, I think, which is fun. You get to try all sorts of stuff.
Okay, so is that we have time for one last question?
Okay.
What's that?
Long answers.
Okay. So we've reached the point in our program where there's time for only one last question. And we have a lot of them that are really great. But here's an interesting one. How does the concept of terroir apply to chocolate? Are differences in chocolate, you're going to have to keep your answers short because this is a complicated question. Are differences in dark chocolate from various countries due to the soil, weather, geography, or the manipulation by the manufacturer?
Yes.
Yes. The answer is yes.
Yeah. That was a very short answer. Maybe we have 2 minutes to expound on that. So talk about terroir, because that is a concept that's often used when speaking about wine and artisanal cheeses, for example. Talk about it in terms of chocolate.
Well, have you actually been to a plantation?
I've been to a couple different plantations. Yeah, definitely the region where chocolate is grown affects the flavor of it. One of my favorite varietals of chocolate is from Madagascar, and it usually has a tangy olivine tinge to it. And that has to do with the soil, but it also has to do with the manufacturing. So, I mean, the terroir. Terroir is just one variable. It's a very important variable. Usually, chocolate from Ghana is more just traditionally chocolatey, just like not very multidimensional. It's just like a classic chocolate taste. Whereas chocolate from Java usually has a really crazy, smoky, tobacco-y type flavor going on, because not only does it have to do with the soil where it's grown, but their technique of drying there, drying the beans, it's so moist there that they can't just let the beans air dry under the sun. They actually have to dry them under wood smoke fires, so it imparts that kind of really smoky flavor.
Venezuelan,
I think it can be earthy and tangy and red fruity, but again, it also has to do with how the beans are handled. So there's the base chocolate flavor, but then depending on how long you roast it and what you add to it, it can get really different.
I would say we're only beginning to see all of that come out because we're seeing a lot more single origin chocolates. So we're able to go out and experiment things either on our end or on your end. And we'll see, I think collectively we'll be learning more about those kind of things as we go forward and they become more available. But it just hasn't been as available or prevalent as it is now.
It's a very exciting time in chocolate, actually, and in the Bay Area for chocolate.
And Minji, do you have anything to add to that?
No.
I think that we are out of time. I'd like to thank our panelists, Christine Dorr, founder and CEO of Neo Coco, Milena Lopez Maggi, owner of the Chocolate Bar, Kathy Wiley, owner of Poco Dolce, and Mindy Fong, owner of Jade Chocolates. I'm Dana Macy, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than a century of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.